Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hello, fellow humans. Welcome to the Hot Mess Clubhouse, a podcast celebrating funny women, hosted by me, Lucy Vine, an author, journalist, and absolute legend. Tell your friends. This week, we welcome our third guest to the clubhouse, stand-up comedian Jen Brister. As well as being a hilariously funny person who has appeared on telly and supported the likes of Frankie Boyle, she's also officially an author now too. Her book, The Other Mother, a memoir for parents who don't fit the mould, was announced last week and is out in September. We talk about that, being a mum to twin boys and how kids can be total pricks. We also chat about her not being as much fun as her girlfriend, regrets, and being 25% deluded. Hope you enjoy this chat, and if you do, a review would be gratefully received. Thanks! Hi, Jen.
Hi.
Welcome to the Hot Mess Clubhouse.
Thank you. Thank you very much for inviting me.
I'm a huge fan.
Oh, fantastic.
I think you're fucking wonderful.
Oh, that's lovely. I mean, I'm just carry on.
Have you ever been in a club before?
Absolutely not.
No, you're not a club person.
No, I'm definitely the opposite of club. I think probably most stand-up comedians are not very good at clubs.
Anti the structure.
I don't think it's a structure. Well, perhaps it is a structure, but also...
You're just all fucking mavericks, aren't you?
That's what I'm very antisocial. It's actually the truth of it. So when I was a kid, my mum actually... I had a couple of friends who were at guides, girl guides.
And
they're always banging on about how much fun it is. And they go camping and they're making new friends. And I was like, yeah, let's go to that. So my mum was like, are you sure you want to do this? And I was like, yeah, I want to do it. I'm going to be really amazing. I'm going to make loads of friends. Be amazing. So I went.
Yeah.
Hated it, absolutely.
Oh, really?
So I just said to my mum, I came back afterwards and I went, I don't want to do this anymore. And my mum said... No, you've got to give it more than one time.
You wanted to do this.
You wanted to do this. Exactly.
You better stick at this.
So she took me the next week, and halfway through, I just said to them, I made up a lie, and I said, I've got to leave early because I've got an appointment. And they were like, oh.
How old were you at this point?
I don't know, like 11.
And they were like, oh. I have an appointment?
I've got an appointment. I'm really busy. And they were like, oh, is your mum picking me up? And I said, she's just outside. And they never checked.
That's terrible.
So I just walked out.
Another cross.
Another.
Yeah.
I just walked around for an hour until my mum picked me up.
That's amazing.
And then the next week, I didn't even go in.
But you still told your mum.
I just walked around.
And then you, at that point, were you like, mum, listen, I've given it 3 weeks.
No, they saw me. And they phoned my mum. And then she came to pick me up and she went, what are you doing? And I just said, I hate it here. And you made me go back. So I decided not to go. And I just walked around. I walked around the block for 2 hours.
Well, that'll teach her to try to teach you a lesson.
And she went ape. And then I never had to go back. So that's my experience of clubs.
You were endangering your life. So it's probably best not to
make you. Yeah, maybe an 11-year-old girl just wandering down the streets. Probably not a great idea.
Well, I thought I would start. Welcome you to the club.
I'm delighted to be here.
There's an initiation, which is some kind of...
Right.
Don't worry. It's just... quickfire round of questions, a get to know you. So, are you ready?
Yeah.
Where were you and what were you doing when you were 6 years old? Where were you living?
I was living in where I lived all my entire childhood, which was in Kingston.
Oh, nice.
Upon Thames.
Fancy.
And it is now. It wasn't so fancy in the 80s.
Okay.
Yeah. It wasn't fancy at all, but I think it's quite snazzy now.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong. I mean, it wasn't like, fucking, it wasn't rough.
No.
Parts of it were rough, actually, still are, but not where we were. I don't know, what was it? I've got three brothers, just, we were probably just bundling each other, mucking about in school.
Bundling?
Yeah, lots of
bundles. That was the best fun. I taught that to my nieces recently. My sister wasn't a big fan of doing that, but it's brilliant. It's a rite of passage.
It's a rite of passage. You have to get bundled at some point. And girls don't get bundled.
This is it.
If they don't have brothers. So my friend's got two daughters, and it's like, we were like, I've got two sons, they've got two daughters. Like, sorry, it's bundle time.
They take it.
No, they're pretty tough girls, actually. Good. They're like, they cope with it. And actually, they're quite into it.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Okay, good. How do you feel about lies?
White lies, I'm 100% behind.
Yeah, great.
But lies, it depends. I mean, you've got to give me some context here. I think can agree lying is not great.
Well, I think it's pretty good.
But
okay, so as somebody who doesn't like to go out, as you previously mentioned, do you find yourself making up lies to get out of plans? Or do your friends just know that you don't want to go out?
That's in white lie category, isn't it? Totally. So to be honest, a lot of the time I don't even have to lie because I'm working. They're like, can you come out on Friday night? I'm working. I am.
Okay.
But I mean, you know, in that context, yeah, of course, lying is A-okay.
It's brilliant. What are you a snob about?
Oh, I am a snob. You don't think you're a snob and then something comes up and you're like, oh God, I'm dreadful. I'm a dreadful snob. I think when I see parents pushing their children in prams but smoking a cigarette over the pram.
Oh, yeah.
I'm like, come on, dude. Don't do that.
Might as well just blow it in their faces.
Yeah, I'm just like, that is, no, don't do that.
Are you more judgmental, more or less judgmental since you've become a mother?
I am more judgmental, but I'm hyper aware of it. Like, I know when I am being judgmental, I have to go, come on. Also, like, when I see someone, like, literally lose their shit at their kid, I don't know what that kid's been doing all day.
The kid's sometimes probably a dickhead.
The kid is probably a prick, yeah.
Exactly.
So deserved it. But there is a bit of me that goes, you don't need to scream at your kid like you prick. But anyway, the kid is probably a prick.
And it's difficult because obviously you are so amazing.
I'm just I never lose my temper with my children, ever.
Exactly.
Yeah, so it's all good.
It's just expectations are too high. Have you ever had a job you knew you were really bad at?
I've had loads of jobs I was bad at.
E.g.?
Waitress.
Okay, and you were actually bad?
I was.
Or just not enjoy it?
I didn't mind waitressing in that the shifts used to go so quick. If you were in a busy restaurant, I quite liked that. I didn't like how knackered I was, but I was terrible at it. Dropping stuff, customer service, sometimes for taking the order from the customer and then not giving it to the kitchen. Like, there was one time.
The one thing you have to, that's your job.
That is it. That's what you got to do. It's on one occasion, this couple, it got to the end of the night and my boss just went, can you tell them to go? Why are they still here? And I went up to them and went, guys, listen, we're wrapping up.
And some of us have got homes to go to.
They're like, we're still waiting for our dinner. And then I looked in because I had an apron with a pocket in the front, and then I pulled out their order that was in the front of my apron.
Did you?
I had to be like, yeah, I had to. I just went, oh, I didn't give it in. And
at some point, I think it's their fault, because how long do you sit there before you go, listen,
they've been
how much
there
longer?
For hours.
So they were just being so British about it.
They were on a date and they were having this really nice time.
Oh, you probably played matchmaker then.
And they had had plenty of booze. So the only thing I could do is I said, what do you want to drink? Okay, free drink. Dessert? And they were like, yeah, dessert. And I went, all the booze has been free and a free dessert. I mean, I was saying this. I had literally no...
Yeah.
Then my manager went, yeah, that's fine, you absolute dickhead. They got a free...
That sounds actually amazing.
Ice cream thing, whatever it was that they wanted.
They're probably married now.
I hope so.
They still talk about that terrible waitress who
terrible
bonded.
Waitress. Yeah.
You're actually a romantic soul bringing people together with your terribleness.
Some sort of terrible matchmaking, yeah.
At a party, are you impatiently waiting for someone to suggest karaoke, dancing, food, or leaving?
Depends on the party. I mean, like, if I'm at a party and it's like, I've got my friends there, then I'm like, let's get the bloody karaoke on and let's have some dancing. But if I'm at a party where it's like, I've been invited to my partner's friend's party and I don't know anyone, then I'm like...
Hiding in the loo.
Yeah, I'm just like, I can't abide small talk. I'm crap at it. Also, halfway through, I look angry.
Yeah.
And people can feel my
resting
vibe.
Resting angry face.
I have resting bitch face.
Good.
And then I just want to go. And then I just go.
and you do go, like in the brownies all those years ago, you just leave and wander around.
I'm at that point now in my life where I don't want to go to award ceremonies. I don't want to go to some fucking, I don't know, industry party. Yeah. I don't want to do any of that. And I will avoid all of them
What if you get like nominated though?
Then I'm totally there. I take whatever I need to take and then I'm out.
But still out the door. Is there a particular film or TV show that you go back to over and over again?
I mean, if I tell you, there will be so much judgment.
I said lols like four times.
Okay, fine. Right. No, that's true, actually. You've really
let myself down.
Let yourself down there. Probably something like embarrassing. Well, I'm not embarrassed, actually. I'm actually fine about it. Probably something like the Star Wars trilogy.
Oh, really?
The original Star Wars trilogy is something I could watch over and over again. I don't really know. Probably not so much Return of the Jedi, but certainly Star Wars and Empire Strikes Back.
Okay, you have lost me. I like Star Trek, but they're very different.
Oh, no.
I like my sci-fi to be really campy and sticky and stupid and cheap.
Yeah, I mean, it can be. It's quite camp.
I suppose the original was quite campy.
It's pretty camp with Harrison Ford and,
yeah, that's true,
and Princess Leia. That's pretty camp. Yeah, I like all of that crap. Amazing. And I used to, although not so much now, but I used to love that Lord of the Rings business as well.
That was quite good, wasn't it?
I think I've watched those films probably about 20 times.
Have you?
That's sad.
When you have friends over, how worried are you about spills and stains?
I'm not.
No.
I've got two 4-year-olds.
That'll do it.
Yeah, so not at all.
Fair enough. And finally, are you a person who has regrets?
Yeah, of course. Mm.
Some people are very militant about not having regrets, though.
They're lying. I mean, what? You go through your life and you don't regret anything that you've done. Unless you're a psychopath, I suppose you wouldn't have regrets.
I mean, it sounds quite nice to be a psychopath.
Yeah, if I, like, empathy,
easier.
Certainly easier to live your life. I mean, certainly I've done things in the past where I've hurt people's feelings or I've said something and made someone feel sad or I've done something that's been pretty dreadful. I, of course, regret all of that.
Do those things sort of itch at you every now and again?
Yeah, there's a few things where I'm like, oof, when I think about
it.
I'm like, please don't think about that dreadful thing that I did. For sure. Well, I think that's just being human, though, isn't it?
Being a human being. Decent human being.
I hope a decent human being. It's hard to tell, though, isn't it, these days?
Absolutely. Well, congratulations on passing the initiation and welcome to the club. Here is your party bag.
Oh, my God, I get a party bag.
Yeah.
Jesus.
It's just full of chocolate, though, so if you don't like chocolate, it's very disappointing.
I absolutely love chocolate.
Yes.
There's some sweets,
I think, as well.
I'm going to save these for my children just because I would enjoy eating them, but not as much as they will.
Oh,
the Kinder Bueno, they're going to lose their tiny minds.
Chocolate, though, surely.
Is it? I wouldn't give them all of it.
Okay, yeah. They can have
Skittles? Yeah. Oh, my God. Skittles. Good times.
Yay. So I saw your wonderful, wonderful TEDx talk on YouTube.
Oh, right. Thank you.
Oh, my God. It's so brilliant. How did you end up doing that?
Well, it was, I hosted a show and tell run gigs all around the country in quite big theatres, and I did one at the Brighton Dome.
Yeah.
And I was emceeing it. And the chap who organises the TEDx in Brighton just happened to be in the audience.
Oh, right.
And then he sort of contacted me after Edinburgh and said, would you like to do a TED talk? And I was like, a TEDx talk? And I was like, yeah, that sounds great. And he was like, it's in October. And I was like, it's September? And he was like, yeah, do you think you could write 15 minutes of da da da? And I was like,
wow, that's quite a lot of pressure.
I said, well, look, I'll be honest with you, no. Because, I'm starting a tour.
Yeah.
And I have a book to write and I'm really busy. I just don't think I've got time. And I said, but I've just done a show and I think there are a lot of themes within my show that I can expand and turn into a TEDx talk. And he said, fine, do that. And I was like, oh, okay, great. So a lot of that is from my show, and then some of it, maybe 6 or 7 minutes, is what I wrote for it.
Right.
But the scaffolding of it came from my show Meaningless, which I did at Edinburgh.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
So for those listening, it was called Changing the Way We Bring Up Our Boys.
That's right.
And you have obviously mentioned your twin boys. How old are they?
They're four.
Four.
Yeah.
Because I'm a twin.
Are you?
Yeah, and it's fucking weird. Are they identical?
They are not.
Okay, good. Because I think identical twins are weird. Because I'm not identical.
You're not. So have you got a brother? Or you're not a sister.
But I do think it's like much better to have two boys, just because two girls, it's just so competitive and horrible and you get pitted against each other.
My show was often about how as women we kind of, we do that where we go, look, it's better with boys because they're easier. And but actually, no. But
what was the dynamic for you then? Three brothers?
Yeah,
including Estefan.
Including Estefan, yeah.
Sorry, I love that joke.
Everyone does. Bizarre.
Was it an interesting day? I guess you wouldn't know any different then. Did you feel competitive with your brothers?
Not at all.
No.
No, not in the slightest. I mean, competitive at board games.
Sure.
Yeah. But are we all?
Right?
Yeah, it's normal, right?
I have never ended Monopoly. Yeah, yeah. You have to up in the board at some point or other when you're not winning.
Yeah, I totally. I mean, so yeah, competitive in like a kind of very... almost in a way that was not impactful in our relationship. So something that would be like a board game or a card game or a running race or whatever when we were children. But certainly when we got to being adults, I don't remember. I mean, that might be different with the dynamic between my brothers. They might have felt more competitive with each other.
Are they older or younger?
I've got one older or two younger.
Oh, okay.
But certainly as between us as siblings, I never felt that pressure. Mm. And you know, I don't think my brothers did, but possibly a little bit when they were, particularly when they hit sort of 17, 18, maybe a little bit.
I mean, maybe, I always think if you don't feel competitive with your siblings, it's because you're the best one. I'm not even in this race because I'm just up here.
I think
they're desperately competitive with you, trying to reach your peaks of excellence.
Yeah, I think my brothers would very much disagree with you there.
Well, they're not here.
They're not here, so they can't argue. With that very good point. Thank you.
So, two boys, how do you feel about being a mum? Because you were talking in the TED Talk about the way we treat and teach children, of course, which is so interesting. But as somebody that is very self-obsessed, I'm much more interested in the way we treat mums. Do you still feel like you?
Yeah, I do. But I'm very lucky with my partner because I think if you are, I don't know if the dynamic is different in a heterosexual relationship. It might be.
I don't know.
I mean, like, I don't know if like dads are, I mean, like, okay, so I do know from some of my friends who that dads are a little bit tricky.
Useless. Yeah.
Yeah. Can be a little bit useless or just assume that, you know, that's not their job or that's not their role. I think it's changing a lot, and I don't want to start making huge sweeping generalizations here.
Can we?
Okay, men are shit, and women are brilliant.
Yes.
But I think because of the dynamic, two women, it's
lovely.
Yeah, we just kind of really listen to one another, and we preempt things. I think that's the difference. We don't wait to be asked to do something. So if I can see that my partner is struggling or she's tired, or I will go, right, okay, what do you need? And I'll make sure that happens, and she'll do the same for me. So I don't feel like a loss of identity, because I feel like we're dividing that role, that the work that we have to do with the children, we're dividing it very equally. Absolutely. And because I think I'm very fortunate in that my partner, she's very supportive of the job that I do, and so she lets me just fuck off in Edinburgh, or she lets me go away and do whatever. I made a personal decision to go away less, that I'm not going to take those gigs abroad anymore, but if I still wanted to do them, she would be totally up for doing them. But I've just decided I just don't want to be away from my kids and from her, of course.
She's okay too.
She's all right.
Oh, fair enough. Do you think other people treat you differently, though, as a mother? Did your mum treat you differently?
I don't know that my mum is very... She is who she is.
Sounds wonderful.
She is wonderful, and she, you know, we have a difficult relationship, so there is that. But my mum is immovable. Mm-hmm. She's just who she is, and that never changes, and that never moves. And so the way she is with me hasn't, I don't think, changed dramatically, I don't think. But I think she, you know, she is very supportive, and she is, you know, said kind things to me, like, I'm doing a good... Sometimes if I think, oh, God, I'm not doing a very good job, she'd be like, you're doing a great job. And then by the same token, she'd be like, but, you know, she'll undermine the way I discipline my children. Because she's
blowing smoke in their faces.
Yeah, she's very much of a firm hand, and I'm a little bit of a soft touch, I think. Comparatively.
Fair enough.
But I'm happy with that.
You've spoken about your mum, obviously, a few times in shows. It was the whole show kind of about your dynamic. What was it? My mum?
Me, my mum and I.
That's it, yes.
Yeah, that was a long time ago.
It was, yeah. Sorry, yes.
No, definitely. I mean, when I think about that show, I'm like, I don't even remember what was in it. But yeah, was...
Presumably, yeah. You mentioned her.
It was all about her. I did a show based it in the living room, and I pretended that she was in the kitchen.
Amazing.
So the whole time I'm looking behind me because I'm like, oh, you know. So I'm talking about her as if she's in the kitchen and I'm in her house.
Yeah. Does she mind you talking? Does she know that you talk about her?
No, she knows.
She come and see you?
No, she's seen. She knows all the material that I've ever done about her.
Do you run it past her?
Including the stuff that I did in Meaningless, which I think was a little bit. Probably felt a little bit hard, but when I wrote it as a generalization about mums,
yeah.
And I think a lot of people were like, oh god, your mum is like, and I was like, that's not really specifically about my mum, but I think that
did she hear it as a
she's heard it, and I think, you know, she
hasn't taken it personally though.
No, I don't think so, but by the same token, she's like, you know, okay, that's enough now.
I've written a couple of books, and it's fiction, but every time my mum's like, oh, you've written this about me. The first novel, the mum is dead, and my mum was very upset about it.
Oh, really? She's like, it's not you, mum.
Just go back to your publishers and tell them that you don't want this character, your mother, to be dead. And I was like, it's not my mother.
Yeah.
This is not my character development. Yeah. This is fiction. Yeah, but every single, yeah.
But it's easy for you because at least you can say yours is fiction, whereas mine is blatantly not fiction.
Yeah, but you can use the generalised rule.
Yeah. But it's about mums. It's not about you.
I have an S on the end.
I think she would quite like it if I moved on.
Find something else to talk
about. Because she's been in every show, so yeah. She's like, all right, enough now.
Does anybody else mind you talking about them on stage?
I don't really talk about anyone else on stage particularly. I think most of the other people I bring up on stage are caricatures of people that are like, you know, the middle class mum or the boorish man or, sure. You know. Yeah, I mean, if I mention my partner, it's very much in the context of we as a couple rather than, and she is blah, 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 you know, she's ball and chain.
The old ball and chain.
She's not a comedian, no.
No.
That would be a terrible idea.
You smirked probably a little bit too much. Yeah.
Not funny. No, she does make me laugh, but I think the idea of performing to her.
She does make me laugh.
She makes me laugh. She's the best drunk you'll ever meet.
Oh, amazing. Can we get her down here?
She's super, super fun. She's way more fun than me.
Oh, damn.
She's way more fun at a party than I am.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I'm not fun.
You are, shut up. You're so fun.
She's fun.
I've watched your YouTube videos, I've listened to your podcasts. You're fun.
Yeah, no, but I'm not like, hey, relaxed fun. She's like, ugh, silly fun. And I wish I was more like that.
So
I'm
is she more... free to come on this podcast? We'll just stop this and just...
I'll get her on the phone. Let's FaceTime
her. Yeah, we'll just put her on loudspeaker.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
So tell me how you ended up doing comedy professionally. What was your path into it? You did comedy at university or something?
Yeah, I did it. There was a course. Quite a few comics have done this course. Joe Enright, myself, Dan Skinner, who does Angelos,
right.
Epithemu, and was on Shooting Stars, Alan Carr.
Amazing.
To name a few.
Yeah.
Sally Ann Hayward as well, who's a great comic. When you do a degree in drama, very useful degree, One of the options is to do a stand-up course, and that was at Middlesex, and it's in front of your friends and your family.
But you'd already been doing comedy. It's not like you went there and came out a funny person.
No, I mean, you do a comedy course, but, I mean, you're absolute dog shit. You're terrible. Okay. You don't know what you're doing. There's no way you can do a comedy course and be a comedian.
Sure.
You're just somebody that's done a comedy course, and then you go and you try your 5 minutes out in front of your friends and family, and everyone laughs, and you think you're really funny, and then you go out on the open mic circuit and you die in your hole over and over and over again because you realise you're not that funny.
How do you get past that when you go out on the stage and people don't like? Have you had that? Or probably not for a while, but
you get completely. It's delusion.
Okay,
it's a compulsion. And also you need to feel deluded enough to believe that you are good enough to be on there. And I would say that every comedian, and even like I'm talking about the very best comedians that you see on the television that sell out, you know, the O2.
Sure.
Every comedian, I believe, thinks they're probably 15 or 25% better than they are.
Isn't that a human rule, though? Like,
yeah, and I think you have to think that.
Yeah, otherwise
because if you actually were aware of how good you are, you'd probably go, I'm just not good enough to do this.
I'm just going to stay in my
bed. And like 90% of the time, like when you start out, you're really crap.
Yeah.
But that thinking that you're 25% better than crap,
yeah,
is the thing that pushes you on stage.
Fair enough.
And that does continue. Mm-hmm. And you do need that because you have to believe that you're good.
Sure.
And so if you don't have that 25% of delusion, then chances are you won't make it.
It's kind of tricky though, because you've exposed the fourth wall of delusion, because you said you're aware that you're deluded and yet you
carry on. Because now I've realised that even though I'm 25%, you know, shitter than I think I am, I still seem to be good enough.
You're wonderful.
It's fine. Yeah, so.
I'll stop gushing.
So I'm like, that'll do. Yeah.
Well, fair enough. You have worked with some amazing people. Was it recently Frankie Boyle you were working with?
Yeah, I'm still.
Oh, you are still.
So whenever he is warming up for his show, New World Order, or when he was working up material for a new hour, mm-hmm, what he does is he'll have someone supporting him. So because he doesn't have an hour to begin with, so he'll go, right, can you do 20 minutes? And then I'll do 40. And then that eventually you'll whittle down to just doing 10. So I've done that for about the last nearly 3.5 years I've been doing it. Yeah, for him.
And is he as grumpy backstage?
He's lovely to me.
Yeah.
He's really lovely.
To me.
I mean, I don't know. Like, I've never seen
him beating stagehands.
I've never seen him be rude to anyone.
Yeah.
Ever. I mean, he's not interested in small talk.
Well,
chit chat.
Never mind then.
Yeah. So he'll avoid that at all costs, and he doesn't want to meet any of his fans ever.
No. Why?
I mean, why would
you? He hates people.
I think it's less that he hates people, and more that he finds all of that very awkward.
Well, it must be awkward.
And he doesn't know, he's not the guy that is going to take a compliment well, so just remove himself from the situation. But I have a huge amount of respect and love for Frankie Boyle. He's been a real champion of mine, and I'm very, 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 very grateful to him because it has made a huge difference to my career. So, yes, I'm ever grateful.
When are you next on tour yourself?
It will be at the beginning of next year, so probably end of January. Because in September, so after Edinburgh, I will be going on the road with Romesh.
Oh, amazing.
So I'll be supporting Romesh from September to December. And then in January, I'll start my tour.
It does feel kind of like a club. The comedians, you all sort of know each other.
Yeah, a little
bit.
Seems
like fun.
Yeah.
Somewhat. I mean, there's probably a bunch of cunts in there as well.
Yes. Not that many, but in the gang. there are definitely people that you don't. I mean, there are a couple of people who I would definitely. I definitely think are cunts, but not many.
Come on then.
We'll switch the mic off, and I'll say.
Okay.
But certainly on the road, yeah, you know, if particularly if you are a circuit comedian like I am, or have been for many, many years, yeah. then, you know, you get to know people because you're with them for a whole weekend, and because of the nature of the work that you do, you end up having quite intense relationships or friendships with people yeah. because, you know, you're doing these really rowdy, yeah. pissed up, sometimes coked up nights where you're like, oh, God, this is going to be bad. And you've got to, you know, it takes some chutzpah to be in front of 450 people who are like, don't look like they're ready to listen to you, and then get on stage, grab a microphone and command a room. And so there is a shorthand with comedians. And also there's something quite lovely about, it's going to sound really dreadful, but there's a real genuine, not dreadful schadenfreude, but there is a schadenfreude amongst comedians where we loved either exchanging war stories where we go, oh, I died on my ass at this gig. Oh, I'll tell you about the time I died. Or if you're with a comedian who you really, it's a good mate, and you know that they're good, and they know that you know that they're good, but they're just having a terrible time on stage. That is hilarious.
That must be fun to watch.
So fun to watch. Just watch them just like having absolutely a really bomb. Tough time. I mean, not something where people are shouting or being abusive, but no. they're just really struggling. The audience just aren't gelling with them, or they're not gelling with the audience. That is
really fun.
Good times. That's good time. But only with certain comics. Other comedians, it's just painful.
Fair enough. Did you last see bomb then?
Oh, well, I always think of this time I saw Paul McCaffrey, who's a friend of mine, and I think he's a very good comedian. Well, it's not he is a very good comedian. It's just me that thinks that. And I've told this story before, but it was a Christmas gigs in a club in Nottingham, and it was really rough. And the MC who was on stage, who's a really good comedian, was just struggling because they were like shouting, no one was listening. He was having to like just put out fires left, right and centre. And Paul was going on first, and he said to me, this looks fucking terrible. And I went, mate, you just go on there, you know, get your first joke in. And I said, they'll be with you, you know, because you're a brilliant comedian. You'll be fine. And I said, just go out there and just fucking enjoy yourself. And he went, you're right, mate. I'm just going to go out there and I'm just going to enjoy myself. That's what I'm going to do, right? I went, you're right, mate. You go out there and enjoy yourself. So he walked on stage and then he literally picked up the mic, and some bloke shouted, tuck your shirt in. And he went, tuck your shirt in, you fucking cunt. And that was it. And I was crying. He was like, I'm just going to go out and enjoy myself, Jen. Touch your fucking shirt in your cunt. I just was crying. That was.
Did that not get the audience on side?
No, they did not get the audience on side. That was the first thing he said when he picked up the microphone. And then he was on the back foot for the rest of the 20.
Oh, God.
I was just crying with laughter. That really made, that tickled me so much.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Do you love being on stage?
Not always. Not always. Sometimes I hate it. If I really love, I'm at that point now where the material that I'm doing, I'm bored of.
Okay.
So, and I'm writing a new hour for Edinburgh. So the stuff that I'm doing at the moment, I'm not in love with. Okay. So I don't enjoy being on stage as much. I did a set for Frankie last night where I kind of halfway, I'm thinking about my new material. So when I came on stage, I wasn't thinking about my set. And wasn't focused.
Did you tell them to tuck their fucking
I didn't, but I was all over the place. Oh, and no. For the first 5 minutes, they were like,
what is happening?
What is this?
Can you really sense an audience going?
Well, they're not laughing. And I don't know if you know what 5 minutes is like with no laughter, but it's a long time. But I'm experienced enough to not panic, so I just thought. And also, it's for Frankie, and I know that he doesn't care.
He doesn't give a shit in the audience or enjoy themselves.
He genuinely doesn't. He's just like, because I texted him and I said, mate, I'm so sorry about last night. I was dog shit. And he went, wasn't you, it was them. They were
they're
pish.
Dog shit.
Yeah. They were pish and I told them so. And I was like, oh, I love you. So, but you've got to, you sometimes, if you're gigging a lot like I do, you can be a little bit blasé. And I think last night was a reminder that whatever happens, just be focused.
Yeah,
because you owe it to the audience as well. Mm. And I owe it to myself to not, you know, like, yes. So when I'm really enjoying what I'm saying, I love being on stage. Mm. But the sort of hamster's wheel of being on the circuit and you're trotting out the same 20 minutes because you're like, I can't take any risks here.
No.
Because there are too many variables in the room. this guy is shouting, this woman's got her head on the table, that party at the back aren't focused. So you just go, I've got to be bulletproof, there's got to be no gaps in the gags. So you just go, right, well, I'll just bang out the strongest 20 that I can so that I can walk off stage with some dignity. And also so that the club will book me again.
Yeah.
Because you can't, and particularly as a woman, you cannot be shit ever.
Yeah.
You always have to bang it out. I've never, ever, ever felt at a club that I've ever had my feet under the table where I've been able to go, right, if I have a dodgy one, they'll still book me. I've never felt that. So I always go into every gig and every club just going, right, you've got to knock it out of the park to make sure that you get booked again. And I just don't think a lot of men have that.
No. Well, I was going to ask you, would you do much of the telly stuff, all these, I was going to ask your thoughts about the all-male panel shows that we see so much of. Does that interest you, kind of infiltrating those?
I mean, they're impenetrable. So it's not, and I think that now I kind of, in some ways, for a lot of those panel shows, particularly things that are on something like Comedy Central or any of those shows, I am probably too old now for those.
Really?
Yeah, I am, and that's fine. It's actually fine. It's their focus is on late 20s to early 30s, mid 30s, and I'm well into my mid 40s, and for those shows. When I look at the people that they're picking and I don't really fit into those. And that's usually the stepping stone to getting terrestrial TV, is to see that you've got these credits on cable network TV shows, and then they go, oh, right, okay. And I thought doing Apollo, I was like, okay, yeah. I've proven that, you know, I can be funny and I can, you know. I mean, I don't know if it's because I'm gay or because I'm a bit older or whatever, but
they'd want to tick some boxes.
They're not ticking this box, baby. I'm not too worried.
No.
I don't worry about it too much. One, because I can't control it, so it's not worth worrying about. No. And two, because I'm always working. And so if I can tour and people come to see me, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
I've got a book coming out. People want to buy
that. So I want to ask you about the book.
Yeah.
Sorry. So you do writing and stuff as well, don't you?
Yeah.
And what is the book? Tell me about
the book. The book is called The Other Mother.
Amazing.
And it's all about being the other mother. So not the biological mum. Yeah, it's kind of like a memoir of the first, it's like 2 years of my children's life and the bit before.
Wow.
And I've really enjoyed writing it. And that comes out in September.
Okay.
And it's funny. I wanted it to be funny. I didn't want it to be like too earnest. Or, do you know what I mean? I was like, when my girlfriend was pregnant, I just wanted to read a book that kind of reflected my experience.
And it wasn't there.
There was nothing.
No.
So I thought, well, I'll write something. Because, I mean, there's all the lesbians are at it now. They're all at it.
Or writing a book or having babies.
Babies. So babies, doing okay. It.
So there's a market.
Come on. Well, this publishing company thinks so. they don't let you write
a
book.
Bring it out with?
It's with Square Pegs, which is part of Penguin Random House. Yeah.
Amazing. Ooh. Nervous about that? It is a different
thing.
Yeah,
but I was going to ask you, because, you know, you're an author.
Oh,
so
it's
don't you shit the bed?
Yes.
So when the book comes out, can I, all right, I'm going to ask you, when the book comes out, What happens?
You'd hope that they would review it. It is always. I was just doing another interview with an author, and we were talking about that sort of weird thing where you bring in a book out, and it's like this is something people dream about forever, and it's such a huge thing, and then it does sort of come out, and you're like, I'm not J.K. Rowling.
Nothing's happened.
Nothing happens. But no, I mean, I expect that your publicity people will be all over that. But the thing for me was that I just never expected to take it all so personally.
Like, of course you take it personally.
Obsessively reading reviews and stuff. Do you read reviews of your work?
No.
No,
okay. I don't, because I have done in the past, and there is nothing to be gained. And I heard David Sedaris being interviewed, and he was asked that question. I think it was on Adam Buxton's podcast.
Yeah, I was going to say, was that?
Was it? And remember, he asked him, and he was like, they're not for me.
No.
Reviews aren't for me.
True.
They're for people who want to know if they want to buy my book. So whether the review is good or whether it's bad, that review isn't meant for my eyes. And whilst I never thought about it like that, I just thought, I don't have the stamina for it.
No. Because it's lovely. Mostly you'll have lovely, I'm sure you will. I'm sure it's not shit, your book. I'm sure it's brilliant. But
I'm sure if it goes on Amazon and people can review
it. Yeah.
You know, when I do my stand-up comedy, people are very binary about how they feel about me. So it's very rare that people go, nah, I don't really know. They're like, who is this fucking terrible woman? I hate her. Or they're
that's
like,
it's much better though, don't you think? Like, yeah, to be loved or hated.
Well, it's taken me a while to kind of come to terms with that, I suppose, or to believe that myself. But yeah, I do think that. I think if people are having a reaction to something that you're doing, then you must be doing something correct.
Yeah.
And the truth of the matter is, if you're doing something creative that has any value, it is important that some people hate it.
Yeah.
I don't like it when people are prescriptive about comedy. Comedy should be political and should have something. No, comedy should be whatever you want it to be as the performer, and you should do whatever the hell you like. And I think actually lots of people, particularly now, don't want political comedy. They want escapism.
Some kind of respite, yeah, from the hell that is the news.
So it's great that everyone's doing something different. But personally for me, if I'm doing an hour, I would like it to have something where I'm able to express some of my frustration and anger. And also just try to hopefully, what I want to do is convey an idea and make people think about something differently. Look, I'm sure that doesn't happen, but that is the intention. And you know, I don't think comedy changes people's minds. I'm not deluded. I'm not that deluded. I am deluded, obviously. But even if I'm creating an echo chamber where people, like-minded people, can go, oh, it's so nice to be in this space where we all agree on this.
There's a lot of slamming of echo chambers. I love an echo chamber.
I think so.
I don't want to hear from dickheads I don't agree with.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, you know, if you are feeling quite low, or you're feeling like, you know, or you're feeling like there's no hope.
Yeah.
Sometimes an echo chamber can go, actually, do you know what? There is something I can do. There are decent people in the world, and I'm not going to be cynical, and I'm not going to be complacent about this, and I am going to try to be more motivated and get involved. And I think echo chambers are good in buoying people and geeing people up into doing something that's quite positive. So I'm very pro echo chamber.
Same.
Yeah.
Well, on that note, is there anything else that you would like to plug or sell? What should everybody be doing? Should they follow you?
Follow me.
In real life?
Not in real life. As I've explained, I'm not fun times, but you can follow me on Twitter. I'm on Instagram. I mean, listen.
It's just your name, right?
Yeah. And, you know, I do have a podcast with my dear friend, yes, Maureen Younger.
I wanted to talk about Maureen, but we've run out of time.
We've run out of time.
She's just such a brilliant, she's the sort of ideal friend. She's got that beautiful peel of a laughter, hasn't she? And she's so generous with it. Just want her around.
I have her around a lot.
You do.
I have Maureen Younger. I mean, check out Maureen Younger. She has a great all-female comedy night called My Comedy, which is at the Retro Bar.
I obviously need to go along.
You
to
need
that.
To go along. It's
I'm
brilliant.
I'm championing females.
And it's just, yeah, lots of great women being very, very funny.
Amazing. So well done for using your plug moment to plug someone else. That was very nice.
I'm nothing if not generous.
Thank you so much for joining me today, Jen. And thank you everyone out there for listening. Please rate and subscribe if you have a minute. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you everyone out there for listening. Next week on the podcast, we have the brilliant Alison Spittle, who sang Catholic hymns with me. Please do join us for the weirdness.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, From Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.